Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, in case you're interested, you can see me on television tonight talking about the presidential race and term limits, as well as part of the New York One Reporters Roundtable. That'll be around 7:30 and 10:30 tonight on New York One. Now, is it possible to feel sorry for Alan Greenspan? Did you see that sad sack photo of him on the front page of the Times this morning? And did you hear the remorse in his voice when he admitted that he got it wrong on super low interest rates, on housing derivatives, and on deregulation that he admits was flawed? You'll hear him use the word flawed. Here is Greenspan in his congressional testimony yesterday.
We are in the midst of a once-in-a-century credit tsunami. I was shocked because I've been going for 40 years or more with very considerable evidence that it was working exceptionally well. I found a flaw. I don't know how significant or permanent it is, but I've been very distressed by that fact.
Three different clips of Alan Greenspan from Congress yesterday. And who got it right? Well, we'll be talking to various people in coming weeks who did see this coming, even when the Federal Reserve chairman, seen as a sage, a god, a maestro, got it wrong, probably along with your broker. One of those people is Ben Jones, who writes the Housing Bubble blog at thehousingbubbleblog.com. He's the author of that website. He's an accountant and a self-described economic activist, and he lives in California. Hello, Ben Jones. Welcome to WNYC. Thanks for coming on this New York radio station with us.
Thanks for having me. Actually, I live in Northern Arizona.
Oh, Northern Arizona. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
And how long have you written the Housing Bubble blog?
I started it in December 2004.
And you were on the public radio program Open Source back in 2005. We looked you up, and you said at that time, I really question whether the likes of Countrywide Financial and GMAC, that they could make the kinds of decisions about mortgage lending that have been going on. I think they have to have been given the green light at some level. I think that in the long run, abandoning those traditional measures of lending are going to be a disaster. And you said that in 2005 on a show that's on this station, Open Source. What was the reaction when you questioned the abandonment of traditional credit measures back then? Who reacted to you how in 2005?
Well, the public, you know, in 2005 was, depending on where you were, was pretty much the peak of the housing bubble. So, you know, and given that most people don't understand what a bubble is, it's a financial mania. People came on my blog and not only said that I was wrong, but said that I was crazy. And I think that that's, and at the time even, I took that as demonstrable proof that we were in a mania, that folks could look at zero down, people hardly earning enough money to buy a $500,000 house, $1 million house, and being able to get a loan for it, that they couldn't see that was crazy. I mean, it's an emperor wears no clothes situation. And I said on that program, the first thing they asked me was, what makes it a bubble? And I said, well, it's obvious on the face of it. But I think that's the nature of financial mania.
What made it obvious to you?
Well, you know, I had a friend come up and told me in May 2005, my house is going up $10,000 a month. And I looked at him and I said, you really think that can continue? And he really did. And that's, you know, I mean, it was a million things like that were standing out there in front of everybody at the time. But yet on that show, Open Source, economists and I talked about, is it or is it not a bubble? And like I said, to me, it was obvious on the face of it.
What did you mean in that clip when you said Countrywide Financial and the like must have been given the green light? What kind of green light, given by whom?
Well, in other words, the CEO of Countrywide at the time, he's since admitted that every time they saw a competitor lower their lending standards or pursue some new risky, exotic product, and they saw it gaining market share, that then Countrywide would would jump in and chase it too. And there are regulators of the mortgage industry, and even if they basically just sat there and said, "Well, we're not going to do anything," then that's a green light in and of itself by their inactivity. So Countrywide and GMAC was a big lender at the time.
That's the same GMAC that provides the car financing with General Motors?
They actually do a lot more business, or at that time, they did a lot more business in mortgages than they did in cars. Just like H&R Block wrote a lot more mortgages than they did doing tax returns.
H&R Block, too. Who knew about these things, right? Now we know about GMAC. Now we know that the insurance company, AIG, was so invested in these things when we thought they just wrote life insurance policies and stuff like that. Everybody was involved in the mortgage credit business.
Well, they went where the money was. I can tell you who knew about it was Congress. And, you know, it's kind of amusing to me to read about congressmen grilling Greenspan on this and credit rating agencies on that, when all Congress has to do is look in the mirror if they want to know who's responsible for a lot of this, because they were in charge. They knew what was going on. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were in disarray in 2004. There was even a criminal investigation that just of Fannie Mae that just quietly went away in 2004, and yet that was before those two GSEs charged into subprime lending. So
right, GSEs are Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. So it was. Did you find it quite disingenuous when those members of Congress were beating up on Alan Greenspan yesterday?
Of course. I mean, I don't watch it. I don't pay much attention to Alan Greenspan anymore. I think he's more or less irrelevant. But what is relevant is what our government is doing, how they're addressing the situation, and their failure, in my opinion, to correctly assess what we've been through, which was a housing bubble. And that's the implications of that are that prices are going to fall considerably more from where they are today. So and where it manifests itself is in stories like there's one in the New York Times today. Home sellers standing firm in the Hamptons in New York. And mm-hmm. If we had an honest, rational look at what we've just been through the past, you know, maybe 10 years, then there wouldn't be people insisting that their house is worth $2 million when it's probably not worth anywhere near that.
Well, on the other hand, you note on your blog today, the housing bubble blog, let's see, is it housingbubbleblog.com, right?
That's correct.
Housingbubbleblog.com, and my guest is the author of housingbubbleblog.com, Ben Jones, who's one of the people who got it right and early about what's going on today. You note how regional the impact is from the housing bust. And, you know, New York, so far, bad, but not so bad so far. Certainly not like California and Florida and some of the other states you write about that are at the leading edge of it. So, you know, New York has a chronic housing shortage based on population trends for 50 years through good times and bad. So maybe New York is a little different. Do you have an opinion from out there in Arizona?
Yeah, there's no market that's different. And there's no shortage, even in Tokyo, which at one time during their real estate bubble in the 80s, the Imperial Palace, I understand, was valued at being worth more than all of California put together. And so, I mean, if a city like Tokyo can have a bubble and then a bust, then so can New York. And I think you're seeing the effects of overpricing of housing in your condo market. And I think that you'll see prices fall substantially, because when markets are distorted by a financial mania, all sorts of bad economic decisions are made, including condo towers. And all they have to do is go, you know, they used to talk about shortages in Miami and with like a 5 or 6 year supply of condos. Nobody's talking about shortages of housing in Miami anymore.
Right.
And they don't talk about it in Tokyo either.
You weren't alone in warning about this. I would say that lots of, if I can call you one of the little people, lots of little people were, but somehow the wise men didn't hear. You think?
Well, and that's the nature of a financial mania, is that the crowd believes that the emperor has clothes on, and then the little boy believes his eyes. And I think the reason that I proved out to be correct on this was that I believed what I saw. When people told me there's a shortage of land, I thought it was ludicrous. I think anybody that's ever been on a commercial airline flight in the United States knows there's no shortage of land in this country. But yet, that was the conventional thought on Wall Street, in Washington, in the credit agencies. And I think that's the way financial manias play out. They build their own momentum. Myths are built around them. And then people make really poor judgments based on those miscalculations. And people talk, I read a lot these days about crisis and those sorts of things. The crisis was when housing prices got so high that almost nobody in this country could afford them. And what we're seeing now is the inevitable, necessary correction of these economic misallocations. And that's part of what, you know, why I'm disappointed in our leadership and even to some extent the media, that we're failing to see what we've been through correctly. And then now we're making things, in my opinion, we're making things worse.
How so?
Well, like this, by failing to acknowledge that prices are going to fall considerably more. And there's like this story in the Hamptons about sellers standing firm. And what are we doing? We're running around in Washington trying to encourage people to buy houses right now. The average person shouldn't be buying a house at today's price levels. What we're really doing, likely doing, in my opinion, is setting up more people for foreclosure, putting people into loans that in houses that they won't be able to afford. And not looking back and saying, well, what are the income levels that sustain certain house prices? We're basically setting up people for more of the same.
Right.
Pouring a bunch of money into Wall Street is, in my opinion, is counterproductive.
Do you have any thoughts about later phases of all this that we haven't seen yet, like the fate of the dollar and inflation?
Well, the fate of the dollar is going to be likely weakened if we continue to borrow hundreds of billions of dollars to try to prop up an unsustainable structure. I mean, these corporations, they need to go out of business, some of them. They made bad bets. They were reckless. These CEOs, they need to lose their jobs. And it's part of the economy teaching a lesson, not just for this generation, but for future generations.
Now, you came to our attention through a friend and colleague, and, you know, you're not one of the professional economists and economic pundits out there. You write and have been since 2004, as you said, housingbubbleblog.com. You are an accountant, and you also call yourself a self-described economic activist. Talk about the activist part. What do you consider yourself an activist for?
Well, when I first coined that was when I was initially blogging. I didn't have any ads up. I had zero revenue for like the first 10 months, and my family was saying, Ben, what are you doing? You're throwing away a career. And I felt like I was doing some good. So the activism was that I was pursuing this out of the need to warn people. I mean, I had been through I was a real estate major in Texas right when the bust hit, the real estate bust hit. We had a bubble.
That was in the 80s there?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And so when everybody else was talking about everyone in the media was talking about what a wonderful bonanza this housing boom was, and just couldn't go on enough about how rich it was making everybody, and it was a new paradigm, and I saw warning signs all over the place, just basically because I had lived through it, and saw the pain and misery that was delivered on households in Texas. I mean, it was pretty ugly in the 80s, and it's ugly now, and it's...
So what about solutions, according to you? You said you don't like the corporate bailouts. What about buying the bad mortgages off the homeowners, like McCain and some others want to do?
I think it's misguided. This is not a foreclosure crisis. People are making rational decisions to walk away from these loans. And a lot of what people miss is in many markets, the vast majority of foreclosures are actually refinancings. These people basically sold their houses to the bank. I mean, I look at foreclosures here in northern Arizona where people took out money not once, twice, three or four times, and then took that money and gambled it again on more real estate. It was reckless gambling, and to try to think that the United States government is in the position to bail out or sustain a housing bubble is ludicrous. And any more than Japan. I mean, Japan made similar mistakes in the 80s, papered over a lot of losses, put them offshore, and they got a 17-year recession out of it. And I'd hate to see us make the same mistake.
All right. My friend who's been warning about this for a year says if you can only read one person about housing, read Ben Jones, author of housingbubbleblog.com. He's an accountant and self-described economic activist living in northern Arizona. Thanks a lot for joining us, Ben.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.